line receded into smallness. Noah placed his hand on mine, just slightly, barely touching, but I felt it. I tilted my head to look at his face, and he half-smiled while staring straight ahead. It was contagious. I smiled back. In response, Noah laced his fingers in between my bandaged ones, still resting on the plastic. I was too preoccupied by his hand on mine to feel any pain. "Are you afraid of anything?" I asked. His smile evaporated. He nodded his head once. "Well," I prodded, "I showed you mine." "I'm afraid of forgeries." I turned away. He couldn't even reciprocate. Neither of us spoke for about a minute. But then, "I'm afraid of being fake, empty," Noah said tonelessly. He released my fingers and the palm of his hand rested on the back of mine for a moment. My entire hand would fit almost completely into his. I flipped mine over and laced our fingers together before I realized what I was doing. Then I realized what I was doing. My heart skipped a beat. I watched Noah's face for something, a sign, maybe. I honestly didn't quite know what. But there was nothing there. His expression was smooth, his forehead uncreased, blank. And our fingers were still entwined. I didn't know if mine were holding his in place by force, and if he were just resting, or... "There's nothing I want. There's nothing I can't do. I don't care about anything. No matter what, I'm an imposter, an actor in my own life." His sudden candor floored me. I had no idea what to say, so I said nothing. He extracted his hand from mine and pointed to an enormous gold dome across the water. "That's the Miami Aquarium." Still nothing. Noah's free hand searched in his pocket. He tapped out a cigarette and lit it, exhaling the smoke through his nose. "We ought to go." He wanted to take me back home. And to my surprise, I didn't want that. "Noah, to this aquarium. They have a killer whale there." "Okay. Her name's Lolita."
"Well, that's twisted."
"Yeah, I know." And let the awkward silence ensue. We turned off the highway in an opposite direction from the seaquarium, and the street curved into a busy neighborhood filled with peach, yellow, orange, and pink stucco boxes, houses with bars on the windows. Everything was in Spanish, every sign, every storefront. But even as I looked, I felt Noah sitting next to me, inches away, waiting for me to say something. So I did.
"So, have you seen Lolita?" I asked. I wanted to punch myself in the face.
"God, no."
"Then how'd you hear about her?"
He ran his fingers through his hair and a few strands fell into his eyes, catching the mid-morning sunlight. "My mother's somewhat of an animal rights activist."
"Oh, right, the vet thing."
"No, from before that. She became a vet because of the animal business, and it's more than that anyway." I knit my eyebrows together.
"I don't think it's possible to be any more vague."
"Well, I don't know how to describe it, honestly."
"Like animal rescue and stuff?" I wondered if Noah's mother had pulled any dog theft capers like mine with Mabel.
"Kind of, but not what you're thinking."
"Ha. So, what then? Ever hear of the Animal Liberation Front?"
"Aren't they the ones that let all those lab monkeys out of their cages and they spread this virus that turns people into zombies?"
"I think that's a movie."
"Right. But that's the general idea." I conjured an image of Dr. Shaw in a ski mask, freeing lab animals. "I like your mom."
Noah smiled slightly. "Her primate freedom-fighting days ended after she married my father. The in-laws didn't approve," he said with mock solemnity.
"But she still gives money to those groups. When we moved here, she was all riled up about Lolita, and she had a few fundraisers to try and raise enough money to get a bigger tank."
"What happened?" I asked, as Noah took a long drag on a cigarette.
"The bastards kept raising their price with no guarantee that they'd actually build the thing," Noah said, exhaling the smoke through his nose. "Anyway, because of my dad, she just gives money now, I think. I've seen the return envelopes in the outgoing mail."
Noah took a sharp right, and I reflexively glanced out the window. I hadn't been paying attention to the scenery. I was sitting inches away from Noah, after all, but now noticed that somewhere along the way, North Cuba had transformed into East Hampton, sunlight filtering through the leaves of the enormous trees that lined both sides of the street, dappling our faces and hands through the glass of the windshield and sunroof. The houses here were experiments in excess. Each one was more ostentatious and absurd than the next, and there was no uniform look to them whatsoever. The only thing the modern glass house on one side of the street had in common with its opposite, a stately Victorian, was the scale. They were palaces.
"Noah?"
I asked slowly.
Yes.
Where are we going?
I'm not telling you.
And who is this friend?
I'm not telling you.
Then, after a beat,
don't worry, you'll like her.
I look down at the shredded knees of my jeans and my worn sneakers. I feel ridiculously underdressed for a Sunday brunch scenario, just saying.
She won't care,
he said as he ran his fingers through his hair.
And you're perfect.
Chapter 27
Rows of palm trees sprung up from the sides of the narrow street, and the ocean peeked out from the spaces in between homes when we drove to the end of the cul-de-sac, an enormous automated iron gate opened for us. A camera was perched at the entrance. The day was getting weirder.
So, what does this friend do, exactly?
You could call her a lady of leisure.
Makes sense. Probably don't have to work if you can afford to live here.
No, probably not. We passed an enormous, garish fountain in the center of the property. A muscled, barely clothed Greek man clasping the waist of a girl who reached into the sky. Her arms transformed into branches and spouted pale golden water in the sunlight. Noah pulled all the way up to the front entrance, where a man in a suit was waiting.
Good morning, Mr. Shaw, the man said as he nodded to Noah and then moved toward the passenger side door to open it for me.
Morning, Albert. I got it.
Noah exited the car and opened the door for me. I narrowed my eyes at him, but he avoided my stare.
You must be here often, I said cautiously.
Yes.
Albert opened the front door for us and Noah breezed right in. As extravagant as the landscaping, fountain, driveway, and gate were, nothing could have prepared me for the mansion's interior. On either side of us, arches and columns towered into a double balcony. My chucks squeaked on the flawlessly patterned marble floor. And there was another Greek-inspired fountain in the center of the inner courtyard, with three women carrying watering jugs. The sheer enormousness of the place was staggering.
No one can possibly live here, I said to myself.
Noah heard me.
Why's that? Because this is not a house. This is like a set from some mafia movie, or a tacky wedding venue, or Annie.
Noah tilted his head.
A scathing yet accurate analysis.
Alas, I am afraid people do actually live here.
He sauntered carelessly to the end of the courtyard and turned left. I followed him, wide-eyed and wondrous, into an equally expansive hallway. I didn't notice the small black streak of fur hurtling in my direction until she was only a few feet away. Noah whisked the dog into the air just as it charged me.
You little bitch, Noah said to the snarling dog. Behave.
I raised an eyebrow at him. Mara, meet Ruby. The squirming mass of fat rolls and fur strained for my jugular, but Noah held her back. The pug's smushed face only magnified the sounds of her fury. It was disturbing and hilarious at the same time.
She's charming, I said.
Noah? I turned around to see Noah's mother standing about 20 feet behind us, barefooted and impeccably dressed in white linen.
I thought you were out for the day, she said.
Out for the day?
Like an idiot, I left the keys here.
Left the keys here?
That was when I first noticed the fawn-colored dog trying to hide behind Dr. Shaw's knees.
Is that? I looked from the dog to Noah. His face broke into a smile.
Mabel! He called loudly.
She whined in and stepped backward, farther behind the fabric of Dr. Shaw's dress.
Come here, gorgeous! She whined again.
Still looking at the dog, Noah said,
Mom, you remember Mara?
He tilted his head in my direction while he crouched, trying to call the dog over.
I do, she said, smiling.
How are you?
Good,
I said, but I was too absorbed in the scene unfolding before me to really focus. The vicious pug, Mabel's terror, and the fact that Noah lived here.
Here.
He walked over to where his mother stood and reached down to pet Mabel, with Ruby still struggling in his other arm. Mabel thumped her tail against Dr. Shaw's legs. It was incredible how much better she looked after just over a week. Her spine and hip bones still protruded, but she was already starting to fill out. And her coat looked impossibly healthier. Amazing.
Would you take her?
He offered a little dog to his mother, who held her arms out. Since I had to double back, I thought I'd let Mara and Mabel get reacquainted while we're here. Mabel wanted no part of that plan, and Dr. Shaw seemed to know it.
Why don't I take them both upstairs while you two...
It's Ruby fussing that's making her nervous. Just take her. We'll be fine.
Noah crouched down to pet Mabel. Dr. Shaw shrugged.
It was nice to see you again, Mara.
You too, I said quietly as she walked out.
Noah lifted Mabel in a football carry before she could bolt after Dr. Shaw. The poor dog's legs paddled as if she were running on a phantom treadmill. A memory of a hissing black cat flared in my mind.
You're scaring her, Joseph had said. And Mabel was scared too. Of me.
My breath caught in my throat. That was a crazy thing to think. Why would she be scared of me? I was being paranoid. Something else was freaking her out. I tried not to let the hurt leak into my voice when I spoke.
Maybe your mom's right, Noah.
She's fine. Ruby just made her nervous. The whites of Mabel's eyes were visible by the time Noah carried her over to where I stood. He looked at me, confused.
What did you do, bathe in leopard urine before you left the house this morning?
Yes, leopard urine. Never leave home without it. Mabel whined and yelped and strained against Noah's arms.
All right, he said finally. Mission aborted.
He placed Mabel on the floor and watched her scramble out of the hall, her claws clicking on the marble.
She probably doesn't remember you,
Noah said, still looking in Mabel's direction.
I dropped my gaze. I'm sure that's it, I said. I didn't want Noah to see that I was upset.
Well,
he said finally. He rocked back on his heels and studied me. I willed myself not to blush under his stare.
Well, time to change the subject. You are a lying liar who lies.
Oh? I looked around us, at the towering ceiling and sweeping balconies.
You kept all of this a secret.
No, I didn't. You just never asked.
How was I supposed to guess? You dressed like a hobo.
At this, a mocking grin crept over Noah's mouth.
Haven't you heard not to judge a book by its cover?
If I'd have known it was a trite proverb day, I would have stayed home. I rubbed my forehead and shook my head.
I can't believe you didn't say anything.
Noah's eyes challenged me.
Like what?
Oh, I don't know, like, Mara, you might want to wear some makeup and put on heels because I'm going to take you to my family's palace in Miami Beach on Sunday. Something like that.
Noah stretched his lithe frame, locking his fingers and raising his arms above his head. His white t-shirt rose, exposing a sliver of stomach and the elastic of his boxers above the low waistband of his jeans. Button fly, I noticed. Well played.
First, you don't need makeup, he said as I rolled my eyes.
Second, you wouldn't last an hour in heels where we're going. Speaking of which, I have to get the keys.
Oh, yes, the mysterious keys.
Are you going to go on about this the entire day now? I thought we were making progress.
Sorry, just a tad rattled by the pug attack and Mabel's freak out and the fact that you live in the Taj Mahal.
Rubbish. The Taj Mahal is only 186 square feet. This house has 25,000.
I stared at him blankly. I was kidding, he said. I stared at him blankly.
All right, I wasn't kidding. Let's go, shall we?
After you, my liege, I said.
Noah gave an exaggerated sigh as he started walking to an enormous staircase with an intricately carved banister. I followed him up and shamefully enjoyed the view. Noah's jeans were loose, barely hanging onto his hips. When we finally reached the top of the staircase, Noah took a left down the long corridor. The plush oriental rugs muffled our footsteps, and my eyes drank in the detailed oil paintings that hung from the walls. Eventually, Noah stopped in front of a gleaming wooden door. He reached to open it, but we heard the careless slam of a door behind us and turned.
Noah?
Asked a sleep-ridden voice.
Female.
Hey, Katie.
Even with pillow creases on her face, the familiar girl was absolutely stunning. She looked as otherworldly standing there in a camisole and short set as she had in her fairy getup. Without the costume and the pulsating lights in the club, it was obvious that she shared Noah's extraterrestrial beauty. Her hair was the same dark honey brown color as his, only longer. The ends skimmed the lace bottom of her camisole. Her blue eyes widened in surprise as they met mine.
"I didn't know you had company," she said to Noah, suppressing a smile.
He shot her a look, then turned to me.
"Mara, my sister Katie."
"Kate," she corrected him, then gave me a knowing glance.
"Morning."
I couldn't manage much more than a nod. At that moment, a perky, blonde cheerleader was doing cartwheels in my vena cava.
His sister. His sister.
"It's almost noon now, actually," Noah said.
Kate shrugged and yawned.
"Well, nice meeting you, Mara,"
she said and winked at me before heading down the stairs.
"You too,"
I managed to breathe. My heart rioted in my chest. Noah opened the door all the way, and I tried to compose myself.
This changed nothing. Nothing at all. Noah Shaw was still a whore, still an asshole, and still painfully out of my league. This was my inner mantra, the one I repeated on a loop until Noah tilted his head and spoke. Are you coming in? Yes. Yes, I was.
Chapter 28. Noah's room was startling. A low, modern platform bed dominated the center of it, but otherwise there was no furniture except for a long desk that blended inconspicuously into an alcove. There were no posters, no laundry, just a guitar leaning against the side of the bed, and the books. Rows upon rows of books, lining built-in shelves that stretched from the floor to the ceiling. Sunlight spilled through the enormous windows that overlooked Biscayne Bay. I never imagined what Noah's room would look like, but if I had, I wouldn't have imagined this. It was gorgeous, definitely, but so bare, unlived in. I circled the room, trailing my fingers along some of the spines as I went. "Welcome to the private collection of Noah Shaw," he said. I stared at all of the titles. "You have not read all of these." "Not yet." I cracked a smile. "So, it's a tail-chasing tactic." "Pardon?" I could hear the amusement in his voice. "Vanity books," I said without looking at him. "You don't actually read them. They're just here to impress your guests." "You're a mean girl, Mara Dyer," he said, standing in the middle of his room. I felt his eyes on me, and I liked it. "I'm wrong," I asked. "You are wrong." "All right," I said, and I pulled a random book from the shelf. "Maurice by E.M. Forster. What's it about? Go." Noah told me about the gay protagonist who attended Cambridge in turn-of-the-century Britain. I didn't believe him, but I hadn't read it, so I moved on. "A portrait of the artist as a young man." Noah belly-flopped onto his bed, affecting a bored tone as he rattled off another synopsis. My eyes followed the thousand-mile stretch of his back, and my feet itched with the confusing impulse to walk over and join him. Instead, I pulled out another book without reading the spine first. "Ulysses," I called out. Noah shook his head, his face buried in the pillow. Satisfied, I smiled to myself, put the book back on the shelf, and reached for another. The dust jacket was missing, so I read the title from the cover. The Joy of... Crap. I read the rest of the full title of the thick, nondescript volume to myself and felt myself redden. Noah turned over onto his side and said with mock seriousness, "I've never read The Joy of Crap. That sounds disgusting." I blushed deeper. "I have, however, read The Joy of Sex," he continued, a mischievous smile transforming his face. "Not in a while, but I think it's one of those classics you can come back to again and again." "I don't like this game anymore," I said as I placed the book back on its shelf. Noah reached over to the floor next to his bed, near the acoustic guitar that was propped up against a sticker-covered case. He jangled the keys. "Well, we can go now. You can come back and grill me on the library's contents later," he said, his grin still in place. "You hungry?" I was, actually, and nodded. Noah walked to a well-disguised intercom and pressed his finger on the call button. "If you order some servant to bring food, I'm leaving." I was going to make sure Albert hadn't moved the car. "Oh, right. Albert the butler. He's a valet, actually." "You are not helping yourself." Noah ignored me and glanced at the clock by his bed. "We really ought to have been there by now. I want you to have some time to get the full experience. But we can stop at Mireia's on the way." "Another friend?" "A restaurant. Cuban. The best." When we reached the car, Albert smiled as Noah opened my door for me. After the mansion was out of sight, I screwed up the courage to attack Noah with the questions that plagued me since learning of his assets, the financial sort. "So who are you people?" I asked. "You people?" He slipped on his sunglasses. "Cute. Your family. Supposedly the only people who live here are basketball players and has-been pop singers. My father owns a company." "Okay," I said. "What kind of company?" "Biotechnology." "So where was Daddy Warbucks this morning?" Noah's face was curiously blank. "Don't know, don't care," he said easily. He stared straight ahead. "We're not close," Noah added. "Clearly." I waited for him to elaborate, but he lifted his sunglasses and hid his eyes instead. Time to change the subject. "So, why doesn't your mother have a British accent?" "She doesn't have an English accent because she's American." "Oh, my God, really?"
I mocked. I saw Noah's smile in profile. He paused before continuing. She's from Massachusetts, and she is not actually my biological mother.
He looked at me sideways, gauging my reaction.
I kept my face even. I didn't know much about Noah, aside from his rumored extracurricular activities. But I realized then that I wanted to. I had no idea what to expect this morning when he picked me up, and to an extent I still didn't. But I no longer thought it would be some nefarious plot, and that made me curious. My mother died when I was 5 and Katie was almost 4. The revelation knocked me out of my thoughts, and made me feel like a jackass, after picking not one, but 2 unpleasant topics of conversation.
I'm sorry, I said lamely.
Thanks, he said, staring at the bright road ahead of us. It was a long time ago, I don't really remember her, he said, but his posture had stiffened. He didn't speak for a minute, and I wondered if I was supposed to say something. But then I remembered everyone telling me how sorry they were when Rachel died, and how little I wanted to hear it. There was just nothing to say. Noah surprised me by continuing. Before my mother died, she and my dad and Ruth, he tipped his head back toward the house, were all really close. Ruth spent high school in England, so that's how they met, and they stayed friends while at Cambridge, wreaking havoc and organizing protests. I raised my eyebrows. Ruth told me my mother was the most enthusiastic, chaining herself to trees and breaking into university science departments and freeing lab animals and such, Noah said as he placed a cigarette between his lips. The 3 of them ran around doing it together, incomprehensible if you know my father, and somehow he convinced my mother to marry him. The cigarette dangled from his lips as he spoke, drawing my eyes like a magnet. While they were still in college, some ultimate act of rebellion or something. He lit the cigarette, opened his window, and inhaled. His face was carefully impassive beneath the dark lenses as he spoke. My grandparents were unenthused. Their old money were not fans of my mother's to start, and thought my father was ruining his prospects, etc., etc. But they married anyway. My stepmother moved back to the U.S. for vet school, and my parents lived la vie bohème for a while. When they had kids, my grandparents were happy. Katie and I were so close together that I think they were hoping my mother would go on maternity leave from civil disobedience. Noah fed the ash of his cigarette to the expanse of highway behind us. But my mother didn't slow down at all. She just took us with her wherever she went, until she died. She was stabbed.
Oh, my God.
At a protest.
Jesus.
She made my father stay home to watch Katie that day, but I was with her. I'd just turned 5 a few days before, but I don't remember it, or much of her at all, really. My father won't even mention her name, and he loses it if anyone else does, Noah said without inflection. I was speechless. Noah's mother died, was murdered, and he was there when it happened. Noah breathed smoke through his nose, and it billowed around him before escaping through the open window. It was a gorgeous day, blue and cloudless, but there could have been a hurricane outside for all I cared. In an instant, Noah became different to me. I was riveted. Ruth went back to England when she heard about my mother. A long time ago, she told me that after my mother died, my father was useless, couldn't take care of us, couldn't take care of himself. Literally a disaster. This was, of course, before he sold his soul to the shareholders. And she stayed, and they got married, even though he doesn't deserve her, even though he'd become someone else. And here we are now, one big happy family. His expression was inscrutable behind his sunglasses, and I wish I could see it. Did anyone at school know about his mother? About him? And then it occurred to me that Noah didn't know about what happened to me. I looked at my lap, fidgeting with my shredded knee of my jeans. If I told him now, it might sound like I was comparing tragedies. Like I thought losing a best friend was comparable to losing a parent, which I didn't. But if I said nothing, what would he think? Thanks, he said, cutting me off coolly. It's all right.
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't, he said plainly. Noah pushed his sunglasses up, but his face was still guarded. However, there are benefits to having a corporate sellout of a father.
He was flippant, so I was too. Like getting a car on your 16th birthday?
Noah's grin was full of mischief. Katie as Maserati.
I blinked. She does not.
She does. She's not even old enough to drive it legally.
I raised my eyebrow. And your car? Is it your brand of teenage rebellion or something?
The corner of Noah's mouth curved up into a slight smile.
Sad, isn't it?
He said it lightly, but there was something haunted about his expression. His eyebrows drew together, and I wanted so badly to reach over and smooth them apart.
I don't think so, I said instead. I think it's brave. There's so much stuff you could buy with that much money. Not taking it is pretty moral.
Noah feigned horror.
Did you just call me moral? I believe I did. Little does she know, he said and turned up the volume on his iPod.
Death cab? I asked. Really? I asked.
You sound surprised. I wouldn't have thought you liked them.
They're one of the only modern bands I do like.
I'm going to have to broaden your musical tastes, I said. It's too early for threats, Noah said as he turned onto a bustling narrow road. It was alive with people out enjoying the weather.
Noah parked on the street just as the song ended, and I let him open the door for me. I was starting to get used to it. We passed a small park where a handful of old men sat, playing dominoes. A large, colorful mural was painted on one wall, and striped tents covered the game tables. I'd never seen anything like it before.
It doesn't mean anything, you know, Noah said out of nowhere.
What doesn't?
The money.
I looked around, at the mostly shabby storefronts and cars parked on the street. Noah's might have been the newest one.
I think your perspective is somewhat skewed because, you know, you actually have it.
Noah stopped walking and stared straight ahead.
It's shut up money, he said, and there was an edge to his voice. So my father doesn't have to spend any time with us.
But then his tone lightened.
Even if he gave me nothing, there's still the trust I come into when I turn 18.
Nice, when's that? I asked. Noah started walking again.
December 21st.
I missed your birthday, and that made me sad for some reason.
You did.
What do you think you'll do with the money?
Noah flashed a grin.
Convert it to gold coins and swim in it.
But first, he said, taking my hand, lunch.
Chapter 29. My body warmed at the contact as Noah led the way into the bustling restaurant. I watched him in profile, talking to the host. Somehow, he didn't look like the same person I'd met 2 weeks ago. He didn't look like the same person who picked me up this morning. Noah, sarcastic, distant, untouchable Noah, cared, and that made him real. I wondered if anyone else knew, but enjoyed a fleeting moment thinking I might be the only one as we were led to a table by the window. But then Noah's grip tightened on my hand. I looked up at him. The color had drained from his face.
Noah?
His eyes were tightly shut, and I began to feel scared without knowing why.
Are you okay?
Give me a minute, he said, not opening his eyes. He dropped my hand. I'll be right back. Noah threaded back the way we'd come in and disappeared out of the restaurant. A bit dazed, I sat down at the table and perused the menu. I was thirsty, though, and lifted my head to scan the restaurant for a waiter when I saw him. Jude. Staring at me from under the brim of his hat, in the middle of a throng of people waiting for a seat, he started walking toward me. I squeezed my eyes shut. He wasn't real.
How does it feel to be the most beautiful girl in the room?
I jumped at the accented voice, not Noah's, and definitely not Jude's. When I opened my eyes, a fair-skinned guy with blonde hair and hazel eyes was standing next to the table with an earnest expression. He was cute.
Mind if I join you?
He asked as he slipped into the seat across from me. Apparently, he had no intention of waiting for my answer. I narrowed my eyes at him. Actually, I'm here with someone, I said. Where was Noah?
Oh, a boyfriend.
I paused before answering. A friend. His grin widened.
He's a fool.
What?
If he's just a friend, he's a fool. I don't think I could stand being just your friend. I'm Elaine, by the way.
I snorted. Who is this guy?
Luckily, Elaine, I said, mispronouncing his name on purpose. I don't foresee that being a problem.
You don't? Why's that?
Because you were just leaving, Noah said from behind me.
I half turned and looked up. Noah stood inches away, leaning over me just slightly. The tension was evident in the set of his shoulders.
Alain stood and fished for something in the pockets of his jeans, withdrawing a pen. In case you get tired of friends, he said, scrawling something on a napkin. Here's my number.
He slid it over the surface of the table in my direction. Noah's hand reached over my shoulder and took it.
Alain's eyes narrowed at Noah. She can make her own decisions.
Noah stood for a second, staring at him. Then he relaxed and a spark of amusement lit his eyes.
Of course she can, he said and raised an eyebrow at me.
Well?
I stared at Alan.
That seat's taken.
Alan grinned.
It certainly is.
Noah turned to him too casually and said something in French. I watched Alan's expression grow increasingly anxious.
Still care to join us?
Noah asked him, but Alan was already leaving. Noah slipped into the now empty seat and smiled.
Tourists, he said, shrugging lazily.
I glared at him even though I wasn't mad. I was calm, actually. Unusually so for my post-hallucinatory state. I was glad Noah was back, but I couldn't let him off so easily. What did you say to him? Noah picked up the menu and spoke while studying it.
Enough.
But I wasn't having it. If you're not going to tell me, then give me his number.
I told him you were in high school, he said without looking up.
That's it. I was skeptical. A hint of a smile appeared on Noah's lips.
Mostly. You look too old for your own good.
My eyebrows shot up.
You're one to talk.
He grinned and placed the menu on the table, then stared out the window, distracted.
What's wrong?
He glanced up at me and gave me a tight smile. Nothing. I didn't believe him. The waiter appeared then, and Noah plucked the menu from my hands and handed it over, rushing off our order in Spanish. The waiter departed for the kitchen. I shot him a dark look. I hadn't decided yet.
Trust me.
Guess I don't have much of a choice.
A devious smile formed on his lips. I took a deep breath and, for the sake of peace, let it go.
So, Spanish and French.
Noah answered with a slow, arrogant grin. I had to concentrate to prevent myself from melting in the plastic-covered seat.
Do you speak anything else, then? I asked.
Well, what level of fluency are we talking about here?
Anything.
The waiter returned and brought two empty frosted glasses along with dark bottles of something. He poured the caramel-colored drinks for us, then left. Noah took a sip before answering, then said,
German, Spanish, Dutch, Mandarin, and of course French.
Impressive. Say something in German, I said and took a sip of the drink. It was sweet with a spicy, sharp finish. I wasn't sure I liked it.
Scheide, Noah said.
I decided to give the drink another shot.
What does that mean? I asked, then sipped.
Vagina.
I almost choked and covered my mouth with my hand. After I composed myself, I spoke.
Lovely. Is that all you know?
In German, Dutch, and Mandarin, yes. I shook my head.
Why, Noah, do you know the word for vagina in every language?
Because I'm European, and therefore more cultured than you, he said, taking another swig and trying not to smile.
Before I could smack him, the waiter then brought a basket of what looked like banana chips, accompanied by a viscous, pale yellow sauce.
Mariquitas, Noah said.
Try one, you'll thank me.
I tried one, and I did thank him. They were savory, with just a hint of sweet, and the garlic burn of the sauce made my tongue sing.
God, these are good, Noah said.
I could snort them.
The waiter returned and loaded our table with food. I couldn't identify anything except for the rice and beans. The oddest looking were plates of glistening fried dough balls of some sort, and a dish of some white fleshy vegetables smothered in sauce and onions. I pointed to it.
Yuca,
Noah said. I pointed to the dough balls.
Fried plantains.
I pointed to a low bowl filled with what purported to be stew, but then Noah said,
Are you going to point? Are you going to eat?
I just like to know what I'm putting in my mouth before I swallow. Noah arched an eyebrow, and I wanted to crawl into a hole and die. Shockingly, he let it slide. Instead, he explained what everything was as he held the dishes out for me to take from. When I was full to bursting, the waiter arrived with the check, setting it down in front of Noah. In an echo of his earlier gesture with Alan's number, I slid the check my way as I dug in my pocket for cash. A look of horror dawned on Noah's face.
What are you doing?
I'm paying for my lunch.
I don't understand, Noah said. Food costs money.
Brilliant, but that still doesn't explain why you think you're paying for it.
Because I can pay for my own food. It was $10.
And wouldn't you know I have $10?
And I have an American Express Black Card. Noah, you have a little something right here, by the way, he said, pointing to the side of his scruffy jaw.
Oh, how horrible. Where? Here? I grabbed a napkin from the dispenser on the table and rubbed at the location where the offending food bit seemed to be lurking. Noah shook his head and I rubbed again.
Still there, he said. May I?
Noah indicated the napkin dispenser and leaned over the table at eye level, ready to wipe my face like a food-spattered toddler.
Misery. I squinted my eyes shut out of shame and waited for the feel of the paper napkin on my skin. I felt his fingertips on my cheek instead. I stopped breathing and opened my eyes, then shook my head. How embarrassing. Thanks, I said quietly. I'm completely uncivilized. Then I suppose I'm going to have to civilize you, Noah said, and I noticed then that the check had disappeared. One look at Noah told me he'd taken it. Very slick. I narrowed my eyes at him. I was warned about you, you know. And with that half-smile that wrecked me, Noah said, But you're here anyway.
Chapter 30 A half hour later, Noah drove up to the front entrance of the Miami Beach Convention Center and parked next to the curb. On top of the words, no parking, emblazoned on the asphalt. I gave him a skeptical look.
A perk of being Baby Warbucks, he said.
Noah withdrew the keys from his pocket and walked over to the door like he owned the building. Hell, he probably did. It was pitch black inside, and Noah felt for the lights and flipped them on. The art took my breath away. It was everywhere. Every surface was covered. The floors themselves were pieces, geographic patterns, painted beneath our feet. There were installations everywhere. Sculpture, photography, prints, anything and everything.
Oh my God.
Yes. I smacked his arm. Noah, what is this? An exhibition funded by some group my mother's on the board of, he said. 2,000 artists are being shown, I think. Where is everyone? The show doesn't open for 5 days. It's just us. I was speechless. I turned to Noah and stared at him, mouth agape. He looked deliriously pleased with himself.
Another perk, he said and grinned.
We walked the labyrinth of exhibits, weaving our way through the industrial space. It was like nothing I'd ever seen. Some of the rooms were art, walls twisted with metalwork or entirely crocheted in a walk-in tapestry. I wandered over to a sculpture installation, a forest of tall, abstract pieces that surrounded me. They looked like trees or people, depending on the angle, copper and nickel mingling together, towering over my head. I was amazed at the scale of it, the amount of effort it must have taken the artist to create something like this. And Noah brought me here, knowing I would love it, arranging the whole day for me. I wanted to run over and give him the hug of his life. Noah? My voice bounced off the walls in a hollow echo. He didn't answer. I turned around. He wasn't there. The giddiness I'd felt slipped away, replaced by a low buzzing of fear. I walked to the far wall looking for a way out and registered the soreness of my calves and thighs for the first time. I must have been walking for a while. The vastness of the space swallowed my footsteps. The wall was a dead end. I needed to go back the way I came and tried to remember which way that was. As I passed the trees, or were they people, I felt their faceless, misshapen trunks twist in my direction, following me. I stared straight ahead, even while their limbs reached out to grab me, because they weren't reaching, they weren't moving, it wasn't real. I was just scared, and it wasn't real, and maybe I would start taking the pills when I got home later. If I got home later. I escaped the metal forest unscathed, of course, but then found myself surrounded by enormous photographs of houses and buildings in various stages of decay. The images stretched from floor to ceiling, making it seem like I was walking on a real sidewalk beside them. Ivy crept over brick walls, and trees bent and leaned into the structures, sometimes swallowing them whole. The grass might have edged onto the concrete floor of the convention center, too. And there were people in the pictures, 3 people with backpacks, scaling a fence at the border of one of the properties. Rachel, Claire, Jude. I blinked. No, not them. No one. There were no people in the picture at all. The air pressed in on me and I quickened my pace, my head pounding, my feet sore, and rushed through the photographs, detouring at a sharp corner to try and find the exit. But when I turned, I faced another photograph. Thousands of pounds of brick and concrete rubble were strewn along the wooded grounds. It was a picture of destruction, as if a tornado had hit a building and all that was left was a pile of rubble and the vague sense that there were people beneath it. It was reverent. Each ray of sunlight that filtered through the trees cast a perfect, distorted shadow on the snow-covered ground. And then, the dust and bricks and beams began to move. Darkness pressed in on the edges of my vision as the snow and sunlight receded, leaving dead leaves in their wake. The dust curled back in on itself, and the bricks and beams flew and towered and reassembled themselves. I couldn't breathe, couldn't see. I lost my balance and fell. And when I hit the floor, my eyes flew open at the shock of the impact.
but I was no longer in the convention center. I was no longer in Miami at all. I was standing right beside the asylum, right next to Rachel and Claire and Jude.
Chapter 31. Before. Rachel held out the map she'd pulled from the internet, which showed a detailed blueprint of the facility. It was huge, but navigable if you had enough time. The plan was to enter through the cellar door, make our way through the basement storage area, and climb up to the main level, which would bring us to the industrial kitchen. Then, another staircase would lead us to the patient and treatment rooms in the children's wing. Rachel and Claire were giddy with excitement as they pried open the basement door with a groaning creak. The Laurelton Police Department had mostly given up securing the place beyond some cursory condemned notices, which suited Rachel perfectly. She was itching to write our names on the blackboard inside one of the patient rooms. It bore the names of other thrill-seekers, or idiots, flip a coin, who had dared to spend the night. Claire was first to walk down the steps. The light on her video camera cast shadows in the basement. I must have looked as freaked out as I felt, because Rachel smiled and promised again that everything would be fine. Then she followed Claire. I walked behind them down to the lowest level of the asylum, and felt Jude loop his finger through the belt hole in the back of my jeans. I shivered. The basement was covered in debris, the crumbling brick walls peeled and cracked. Exposed, broken pipes jutted from the ceiling, and evidence of a rat infestation was pronounced. As we walked through the skeletal remains of some kind of shelving system, our lights pierced random columns of steam or fog, or something that I tried vainly to avoid. At the opposite wall of this section of the basement, a full stairway with a rotten wood banister twisted up to the main floor. On the first landing, only 5 steps up, was a random, high-backed wooden wing chair. It was placed like some kind of eerie sentinel, blocking access to the second floor of the stairs. Snap! The flash on Rachel's camera went off as she took a picture. I shivered in my coat, and my teeth must have chattered because I heard Claire snort. Oh my God, she's freaking out already and we're not even in the treatment rooms yet. Jude rushed to my defense. Leave her alone, Claire. It's freezing down here. That shut her up. Rachel pushed the chair out of the way, and the sound of it as it scraped against the hard floor set my teeth on edge. We wound our way up the staircase, which groaned under our weight. The climb was steep, the stairs felt loose, and I held my breath the whole way. When we reached the top, I almost collapsed with relief. We stood in an enormous pantry now. Claire kicked decades-old insulation and garbage out of her way, careful to avoid the obvious sections of rotting wood floor as she walked through the institutional kitchen and open cafeteria. Snap! Another picture. I felt dizzy as I followed Rachel and imagined stern-faced nurses and orderlies doling out bland mush to drooling, twitching patients from behind the long counter that stretched from one end of the vast room to the other. An impossibly large and imposing pulley system announced our entry into the hall that led to the first floor of patient rooms. The levers that controlled it were on the right, the hulking weights that balanced them visible behind the desk of the nurse's station. The system's cables ran up to the ceiling and stretched down the hall, deviating at the entrance of each individual room, culminating in 1,000-pound iron doors. "Don't mess with the pulley system," the website had warned. A kid exploring alone got trapped on the wrong side. His body was found 6 months later. Of course, I didn't need the warning. My father had told me and my brothers plenty of times how dangerous the old building was. Before he switched to criminal law, he sued the property owners and the township on behalf of the boy's family, and he should have won. His files overflowed with evidence. But inexplicably, the jury found against the boy's family. Maybe they thought the boy should have known better. Maybe they thought the town needed an example. But all I thought about was what it must have felt like to hear the slam of those doors, to feel the reverberations in the rotting floor, in the walls, as thousands of pounds of iron separated you from the rest of your life. What it must have felt like to know no one was coming for you. What it must have felt like to starve. Rachel and Claire's delight reached a higher pitch as we passed the roped cables and levers. Snap. The flash illuminated the cavernous hall. Jude and I walked together behind the two of them, sticking to the middle. Patient rooms flanked us, and I didn't want to go anywhere near them. We followed slowly,
the beam of Jude's flashlight bouncing over the walls as we advanced toward the impenetrable black hole that yawned in front of us. When Rachel and Claire disappeared behind a corner, I sped up, terrified to lose them in the labyrinthine passageways. But Jude had stopped altogether and lightly jerked the waistband of my jeans. I turned. He grinned. We don't have to follow them, you know. Thanks, but I've seen enough horror movies to know that splitting up is not the best idea. I started forward again, but he didn't release me. Seriously, there's nothing to be scared of. It's just an old building. Before I could reply, Jude grabbed my hand and tugged me behind him. His flashlight illuminated the number on the room in front of us. 213. Hey, he whispered as he pulled me in. Hey, I grumbled. Jude cocked an eyebrow at me. You need to take your mind off this place. I shrugged and took a step backward. My foot hitched on something, and I fell. Chapter 32. I tried to open my eyes. They were wet and swollen, and the dark blue-black world rocked around me. I could see only pieces of it. Somehow I was very warm, but my body was curled up. Mara, Noah asked. I was inches away from his face. My head rested on his shoulder in the crook between his neck and his ear. He was carrying me. Not inside the asylum or the convention center. Noah, I whispered. I'm here. He folded me into the passenger seat and brushed a few strands of hair out of my face as he leaned over me. His hand lingered. What happened? I asked, even though I knew. I passed out. I had a flashback, and now I was shaking. You fainted during my grand gesture. His voice was light, but he was obviously rattled. Low blood sugar, I lied. You screamed. Busted. I leaned back against the passenger seat. Sorry, I whispered. And I was. I couldn't even go on a date without crumbling into pieces. Felt like a tool. There's nothing to be sorry about. Nothing. I smiled, but it was hollow. Admit it, that was weird. Noah said nothing. I can explain, I said, as the fog in my brain receded. I could explain. I owed him that. There's no need, he said quietly. I barked out a laugh. Thanks, but I'd rather you didn't think that's my typical reaction to art shows. I don't think that. I sighed. Then what do you think? I asked, eyes closed. I don't think anything, he said. His voice was even. It didn't make sense that Noah was so nonchalant about my little episode. I opened my eyes to look at him. You're not at all curious? It was slightly suspicious. No. Noah stared straight ahead, still standing outside the car. Not slightly suspicious. Very suspicious. Why not? My pulse raced as I awaited his answer. I had no idea what Noah was going to say. Because I think I know, he said and looked down at me. Daniel. I rubbed my forehead, not sure I heard him correctly. What? What does he have to do with... Daniel told me. Told you what? You just met. Oh, I'd been set up. Which was why Noah never once asked me about my old school, my old friends. Not a single question about the move, even though he was relatively new to Miami too. He hadn't even asked about my arm. Now I understood why. Daniel told him everything. My brother would not hurt me on purpose, but this wouldn't be the first time he'd acted like Mom's little henchman. Maybe he thought I needed a new friend, or he didn't think I'd make one on my own. Self-righteous ass. Noah closed my passenger door and climbed into the driver's seat, but didn't start the car. Neither of us said anything for a long time. When I found my voice again, I asked, "How much do you know?" "Enough." "What kind of answer is that?" Noah closed his eyes, and for a split second, I felt guilty. I looked out the window at the inky sky instead of at his face. Noah lied to me. He should feel guilty. "I know about your friends. I'm sorry." "Why didn't you just tell me?" I asked quietly. "Why lie?" "I suppose I thought you'd mention it when you were ready." Against my better judgment, I looked at him. Noah's legs were stretched out languidly in front of him. He cracked his knuckles, completely unfazed, unmoved. I wondered why he'd bother with any of this. "What did Daniel bribe you with to get you to take me out?" Noah turned to me, incredulous. "Are you insane?" I had no good answer to that question. "Mara, I asked Daniel," Noah said. I blinked. "What?" "I asked him. About you. When you swore at me after English, I remembered you from... I found out you had a brother and talked to him and..." I cut him off. "I appreciate what you're trying to do, but you don't have to cover for Daniel." Noah's expression hardened. The streetlight above us cast the shadow of his eyelashes on his cheeks. I'm not covering for him. You wouldn't talk to me, and I didn't know... Noah stopped and fixed his gaze on me. I didn't know what to do, all right? I had to know you. Before my lips could even form the word why, Noah rushed on. When we were in the bathroom that day, do you remember? He didn't wait for me to answer. When we were there, I thought I had you. A sly smile appeared for a fraction of a second. But then you said you'd heard things about me, and those girls walked in. I didn't want them talking shit about you. It was your first week, for Christ's sake. You shouldn't have had to deal with it, especially when no one knew you. I was speechless. And then I saw you in South Beach, in that dress. Then I decided, fuck it. I'm a selfish bastard, who cares? Katie teased me for brooding that whole week, and I told her there that you were the reason. And then you just ran out. So no, I'm not covering for Daniel. I don't know what I am doing, but it's not that. He stared straight ahead into the dark. The bathroom. The club. I was wrong about everything. Or was I? This could just be another play. It was so hard to know what was real. He leaned his head back against the headrest, his dark, tousled hair twisted every which way. So, I seem to be an idiot. Maybe. He grinned crookedly, his eyes closed. But hey, it could be worse. You could be broken like me. I hadn't meant to say that out loud. You're not broken, Noah said firmly. Something inside of me began to tear. You don't know that. I told myself to stop it, to shut up. It didn't work. You don't know me. You only know what Daniel told you, and I don't let him see. There's something wrong with me. My voice cracked as my throat closed, drummed tight with a sob that wanted to escape. Damn it. You've been through. And I lost it. You don't know what I've been through, I said, as two hot tears escaped. Daniel doesn't know. If he did, he'd report it to our mother, and I'd end up in a mental hospital. So please, please, don't argue with me when I tell you that there's something seriously wrong with me. The words poured out, but once spoken, I felt the truth of them. I could take drugs, do therapy, whatever, but I knew enough to know that psychotics can't be cured, only managed. And the hopelessness of it was suddenly too much to take. There's nothing anyone can do to fix it, I said quietly, finally. But then Noah turned to me. His face was uncharacteristically open and honest, but his eyes were defiant as they held mine. My pulse raced without my permission. Let me try. Chapter 33. I expected several different scenarios after my little freakout. Noah rolling his eyes and laughing at me. Noah making a smart-ass comment, driving me home and dumping me at my door. His actual response was not one of them. His question hung in the air. Let him try what? I didn't know how to answer because I didn't understand what he was asking. But Noah stared at me, expectant, with the barest suggestion of a smile on his lips, and I needed to do something. I nodded. That seemed to be enough. When Noah pulled into my driveway, he got out of the car and strode quickly to the passenger door to open for me. I gave him a look, but he interrupted me before I had the chance to speak. I like doing it for you. Try to remember so I don't have to sprint every time. Every time? I felt strange as we walked up the brick path to my front door. Something had shifted between us. I'm picking you up tomorrow morning, Noah said as he brushed a strand of hair from my face and tucked it behind my ear. His touch felt like home. I blinked hard and shook my head to clear it. But it's out of your way. And? And Daniel has to drive to school anyway. So? Noah placed a finger on my lips. Don't. Don't ask me why. It's annoying. I want to. That's it. That's all. So let me. Noah's face was so close. So close. Focus, Mara. Everyone's gonna think that we're together. Let them. He said as his eyes searched my face. But nothing. I want them to think that. I thought of everything that would imply. Because it was Noah, people wouldn't just think that we were together, but that we were together together. I'm a bad actress, I said by way of explanation. Noah skimmed his fingers down the line of my arm and lifted my hand to his mouth. His lips brushed over my knuckles, impossibly soft. He looked into my eyes and killed me. Then don't act. See you at 8. He let go of my hand and walked back to his car. I stood on the doorstep, breathless, as Noah drove away. I turned his words over in my mind. Let me try. I want them to think that. Don't act. Something was starting between us, but it would finish me if it ended. When it ended, which would be soon, if Jamie was to be believed. Dazed, I went into the house, leaned against the back door, and closed my eyes.
Welcome back. I heard the smile in Daniel's voice, even though I couldn't see it.
I tried to regain my equilibrium because my brother was in it deep, and I was not about to let it go because my insides were mid-quiver.
You have some splaining to do, was all I managed to say.
Guilty, Daniel said, but he didn't look it.
Did you have fun?
I shook my head. I can't believe you did that to me.
Did you have fun?
That's not the point, I said back. Daniel's grin widened.
I like him.
What does that have to do with anything? How could you tell him, Daniel?
Okay, hold on a second here. First of all, the only thing I told him was why we moved from Laurelton. There was an accident, your friends died, and we moved to start over. You don't have the monopoly on that explanation, so relax.
I opened my mouth to protest, but Daniel continued.
Second, he's a good guy.
I agreed with him, but didn't want to.
Other people don't think so, I said instead.
Other people are usually wrong. I glared at him. Moving on, tell me what happened. Leave nothing out.
After our first day of school, I went to discuss my independent music study with the teacher, and Noah was there. He composes, by the way, and he's really freaking good. Sophie told me she did a few open mic nights with him last year.
I thought of little blonde, adorable Sophie, and felt a sudden urge to kick her in the shins and run away.
Anyway, when he found out my name, he asked me about you.
I rewound my thoughts. But I didn't meet him until our second day of school.
Daniel shrugged. He knew you somehow.
I shook my head slowly.
Why lie, Daniel? Why pretend not to know each other this morning? Because I surmise, and correctly, I might add, that you would flip out. But really, Mara, you're overreacting. You were barely mentioned in our conversation. We spent most of the time discussing the Kafka-Nietzsche nexus and the parodic sonnets of Don Quixote.
Don't try to distract me with your smart talk. You shouldn't have gone begging for friends for me. I'm not that pathetic.
That's not what I did. But even if it was, have you exceeded your friend quota here in Miami already? Is there something I missed?
I stiffened. It's a dick thing to say, I said in a low voice.
You're right, it is. But you're always insisting that everyone treat you normally, so answer the question. Have you made any other friends since we've been here?
I gave him the death stare.
Yes, actually.
Who? I want a name.
Jamie Roth.
The Ebola kid?
I heard he's a little unstable.
That was one incident.
Not what I've heard.
I clenched my teeth. I detest you, Daniel. I really do. Love you too, sister.
Good night.
I went to my room and slammed the door. When I awoke the next morning, I felt heavy, like I'd gotten too much sleep, but my head ached as though I hadn't. I glanced at my clock, 7:48 a.m. I swore and stumbled out of bed, rushing to put on clothes. But when I passed my desk, I stopped. A small white pill floated on top of a napkin. I closed my eyes and inhaled. I hated the thought of taking it. Hated. But the art show debacle was scary, not to mention the bathtub incident last week. And I didn't want to freak out in front of Noah again. I just wanted to be normal for him, for my family, for everyone. Before I overthought it, I swallowed the pill and dashed out of my room. I collided with my father as he turned the corner and sent the accordion file he'd been carrying flying, papers scattered everywhere.
Whoa! Where's the fire?
He said. Sorry, gotta go, late for school. He looked confused.
Daniel's car's not here. I didn't think anyone was home.
A friend's taking me, I said as I bent to pick up the papers. I shuffled them and turned them over to my father.
Thanks, honey. How have you been? I never see you anymore, stupid trial.
I bounced a little on my feet, eager to meet Noah before he got out of his car. When is it?
Opening arguments in 2 weeks, with 1 week scheduled on the docket, he said and kissed my forehead.
We'll talk before I leave for base camp. I raised my eyebrows.
Moving to a hotel for trial prep.
Ah, but don't worry. We'll talk before I leave. You go. Love you.
Love you too.
I pecked him on the cheek and brushed past him into the foyer, slinging my bag over my shoulder. And when I flung open the door, Noah was already there. These were the things that added up to Noah that morning, from bottom to top. Shoes, gray chucks. Pants, charcoal tweed. Shirt,
Slim-cut, untucked, thin, and pinstriped dress shirt. Super skinny tie, knotted loose around his open collar, exposing the shadow of a screen-printed T-shirt beneath it. Days unshaven, somewhere between